Hello and welcome to another edition of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is your host, John Jantz, and my guest today is David Meerman Scott. Certainly, this audience knows the new rules of marketing and PR. Recently, I don't know how he did it, but he wrote a book called Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead in about 2 weeks. And now he's going to come out. He has another book coming out called Real-Time Marketing and PR. Almost a regular guest. I think this is your third time on the show. David, thanks for joining
me. It is. My third time. Thanks for having me back.
So maybe we'll talk briefly about the Dead book, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote it with a co-author, Brian Halligan. Brian is the CEO of HubSpot.
Right.
And both of us are deadheads. And we've seen the band jointly over 150 times. So, and some of those shows even together. So we both love the Dead. We're both marketing guys. And we realized, having seen each other speak and read each other's blogs, that the Grateful Dead tends to creep into our work. And then one day we said, hey, let's do a webinar. So we called the webinar Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead. With almost no promotion, we ended up getting 1,700 people to show up, and a whole bunch of tweets, a bunch of blog posts, great comments from people. It's like, whoa, there's something going on here. So, and that was April 1st of this year, 2010, April 1st.
In fact, that date was selected consciously, right?
Exactly, to be a little bit foolish. So we did it. We did the webinar, and then we decided, hey, you know, maybe we should do a book. We, you know, got Wiley on the horn, and they said, sounds like a good idea. Let's do a book. And it was in bookstores in July of this year. It was start to finish, a little bit more than 3 months, the entire project from idea through to books on the shelves. And, you know, you're an author, you know very well that, you know, it takes a long time to do a book, not just write it, but the whole production thing. I mean, you submit a manuscript and it takes 6 months before you see the book. So I guess that proves that, number one, you can write a book quickly, and number two, the publishers can produce a book quickly, because we did this thing in a little more than 3 months, start to finish.
Yeah, that's the closest thing to a good segue to our next topic, but that's the closest thing to real-time publishing that we're probably going to see from a traditional house, at least currently.
It was actually really, really quickly, although there's a better example of really fast. Do you remember a couple months ago, 3-4 months ago, Barack Obama fired General Stanley McChrystal?
Yeah.
And when, I think you've heard this story before, but General, you know, he was the commander in the Middle East. And Dave McCulloch is an author. He wrote a book called Truman. And there was a chapter in the Truman book, which came out about 15 years ago, I think. And it was called Truman Fires MacArthur. So he and his publisher, in literally a day, created an ebook, sold it for, I think, $2, $1.99, on Amazon, Amazon Kindle, and it was called Truman Fires MacArthur. So it provided an interesting historical context to the Obama Fires MacChrystal article,
Town hall buzz, right? Yeah,
a perfect example of these ideas that talk about in real-time marketing and PR, and it's just fascinating. So not only can a publishing house get a print book out in a little more than 3 months, they can do an ebook in a day.
Right.
So, you know, next time there's something going on in the news, you know, maybe they yank a chapter out of the referral engine and toss it up as an ebook.
Well, and we're going to get into that very, very subject, real-time marketing and PR, how to engage your market, connect with customers, and create products that grow your business. But I have to tee one up for you. I read that you wrote that this book is the most important book of 7 books you've written. So I've got to hear why that is.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, you know, we always think our latest book is the most important, and I recognize that. But when I put out the new rules of marketing and PR, that was the book actually published June 2007. I was writing it throughout 2006. And as I was writing the book, I was thinking to myself, wow, these ideas are really new.
Yeah.
This is really different. I mean, the old way of marketing compared to what I called the new rules of marketing, really different. I just, in my gut, had a feeling that this is really important stuff. And then the book came out, unfortunately, the market thought so. You know, it was on the bestseller list for 6 months, and it's now in 26 languages, I think. So it seemed to really capture something, I think, because it was fairly early to identify some of the trends that we're now all living through. And I think the same thing's true of this real-time book. The idea that what the web allows us to do is to communicate instantly, and so few organizations are thinking about how to communicate and react and engage and take advantage of opportunities right now, today, not tomorrow, but today. It just feels to me, as I was writing and as we're in the process of pushing this book out, it comes out November 1st, 2010, I just feel that it's even more important today than the new rules was in 07. It's just this feeling I have. I mean, we'll see. We'll definitely see when it happens. I mean, it's easy to figure out whether I'm full of beans or not.
Well, I would say, without going out on too much of a limb, it's probably an equally important evolution of new rules. How's that?
That's good. Yeah, that's.
I mean, and that's.
Wiley called it a follow-up. Yeah. Which I'm not sure, but
well,
yeah,
no, you don't want to call them follow-ups. You know that.
No,
this is breaking new ground, right? But one of the things that I find when I talk about this whole real time, particularly with small businesses, is they're like, "Come on, give me a break! I'm doing everything I possibly can, and now you're telling me I've got to like react to the news." So it really is a bit of a mindset shift, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. The tools are what everyone's talking about is in terms of social media.
Right.
The tools are things like blogs and Twitter and whatnot, YouTube. But real time is just as exactly as you said. Real time is the mindset, the idea that you can do something right now. And you know, it can be a small business, it can be a large business. I mean, anybody can be paying attention to what's going on. And you know, one of my favorite examples, I just think it's just wonderful, is a couple of months ago, Paris, is actually in late August of 2010, Paris Hilton was arrested for cocaine possession in Las Vegas. And that was a huge story. Lots of people talked about it. You know Paris Hilton, you know, whatever.
Right.
So what? And who cares? Like that. So what else? But the Wynn Hotel Resort in Las Vegas, you know, it's a small independent, it's not so small, but it's a, you know, independent hotel in Las Vegas, not part of a big chain, pushed the same day that happened, same day she was arrested, pushed out an announcement that she was banned from the hotel. and that probably took all of 3 seconds to do. I mean, it was so easy to do.
Yeah.
And I'm exaggerating, it took more than 3 seconds, but it took almost no time to do. And they have over 5,200 mainstream media outlets picked up on this fun and interesting story that Paris Hilton, who is a hotel heiress, was banned from the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas. I mean, how wonderful is that? And, you know, when I ask people in a physical event by a show of hands, about half the people in the room have heard that the Wynn Hotel banned Paris Hilton. Mm-hmm. Half the people in the room have heard of something that took them zero money, Wynn Hotels, zero money to do that, and probably in terms of actual work, less than an hour. And all of a sudden, half the people I ask have heard of it. That's the idea of real time. You couldn't do that if you planned to do it a week from now.
Right.
The only time you can do that is when you react instantly to something that's happened.
Yeah, it's a great example of using the news to actually create news. And I think that's probably, you know, the mindset shift. We got to spend some time together, which is always great, when I was in Boston last time. And I got to hear you speak, and you obviously were talking about your new book. And you used a great example that I think can give illustrations to companies big and small about this, and that's the whole United Breaks guitars. Even though we don't have the visuals, we don't have the visuals that you had for that. I think
you can
maybe
sing the song, John.
why don't you set that up and kind of talk about all the wonderful offshoots of people that took advantage of that?
Well, I think many people have heard of United Breaks guitars. It's just this wonderful video of Dave Carroll, who sings for the band called the Sons of Maxwell, did this video because United Airlines broke his guitar when he was traveling from Halifax, Nova Scotia, where he lives, to a gig in Nebraska, and he was changing through Chicago's O'Hare Airport, which is where the damage was done. He spent a year trying to convince United to try to pay him compensation for the damage to the guitar. They never did it, so he said, okay, I'm going to write a song about you. Actually, he wrote three songs. And this song number one, when it broke, just it went crazy. It's to date had something like nearly 10 million YouTube views, but it really climbed very, very quickly. Now, what was interesting about that is that there were two organizations that drafted, well, more than two, but two that had very big success drafting off the success of Dave Carroll and United Breaks Guitars. Both of them small businesses. One is Taylor Guitars, and the guitar that was broken was a Taylor guitar. And when Dave was singing the song, he said, "He broke my Taylor guitar." So Bob Taylor, who's the CEO of Taylor Guitars, the day that broke, said, "Hey, we've got to do something here. This is really great." So he created, with his marketing team, his own YouTube video. His reaction to United Breaks Guitars was a YouTube video. And in it, he tells musicians how to pack their guitars and what they need, what the TSA rules are for traveling with musical instruments, and the fact that you can actually demand that you bring your guitar onto the plane. It does not have to be as checked baggage. And he made recommendations for how to print out the requirements and whatnot. That video got 450,000 views within just a week or two because the whole planet was talking about broken guitars because of Dave Carroll. And then Taylor Guitar drafted off of it. I spoke with Bob Taylor about that. He said it took only less than an hour to film the video. It's actually only a one-minute video, but by the time they set up the lights, did a test, did a couple of takes, the whole thing start to finish less than an hour, 450,000 YouTube views. The second example, another small business, is a company called Calton Cases. They make guitar cases. They're a company out of Canada. So they see this thing breaking. They contact Dave Carroll and say, "Hey, let's work together." And on the first phone call, which happened that day, the day that the story broke, the day that Dave Carroll pushed out this video, they came up with the idea for the Dave Carroll Signature Edition guitar case. And struck a deal with Dave Carroll. He gets a royalty for every case that's sold. It actually didn't require any serious product development efforts because they just slapped a new badge on it. It's a rebranding effort. And then put up a website to start selling it. They're actually selling this guitar just a couple of days after the video was launched. So, again, it's just a great example of when there's something happening out there, people can look at how they can use that to their advantage. Now, are you going to have a success every time? No. But you're never going to know unless you try whether there's something that you can do to draft off of somebody else's success, or even in some cases somebody's failure. What I've been following recently has been the Gap. They redesigned the logo. You probably followed that too. And you know, a lot of people said it was no good. And there's this guy who created a way that you can create your own logo in the Gap style. and he sort of just drafted off of this as well. He's had thousands and thousands of people talk about his little tiny application for, he calls it, to crap your logo. So, you know, just keeping your eyes and ears open. You can, if you have that mindset, if you have that understanding that, you know, I can create a product around something going on right now. I can get the media to talk about me right now. I can create something that will get my fans excited right now. But so many organizations, companies are focused on the long-term planning process. I'm not saying you should ignore the long-term planning process, but so many companies are focused so much on that long-term planning process that they forget about what you can do right now.
Well, I mean, that kind of begs to question. I mean, is size a detriment to speed? I mean, it seems like it would be the case, and certainly in real-time world, even more so. I mean, you probably can't run that thing through legal, can you?
You know, I actually wanted to know the answer to that question because that's an obvious question, very perceptive on your part to bring it up. I actually, in doing my research, have found that, no, size is not a detriment. However, And what I mean by that is any organization, even a Fortune 100 sized company, can do the things that we've just talked about. However, so many of those companies do have legal and, in some cases, corporate communications policies in place that forbid them from engaging quickly. You know, things have to be run by the lawyers. Right. They have to go through 15 levels of approval. They've got to get signed off here and signed off there. So in the case of the Gap logo, you know, if the Gap logo was announced on the Friday before a long weekend holiday in the United States, you know, it's not very many companies where an employee can make a decision on a Saturday morning that they're going to do something about it. Most companies would have to wait till Tuesday morning, like what is that, 72 hours later,
right,
when people are back in the office to engage. So what it requires is a set of guidelines that let people communicate when the time is right, and have the policies and procedures in place that permit employees to engage when the time is right. And there are plenty of companies to have those procedures and policies in place, and those are the ones that are going to succeed in the future.
So let's say one of these stories is breaking and you're thinking, oh, I know that the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and AOL, you know, are all going to write stories about this. Is there a new way to jump in and say engage folks at the media in this kind of real-time world to maybe help them write that story?
This halftime break is brought to you by Constant Contact. Constant Contact helps small businesses and nonprofits build great customer relationships with email marketing, event marketing, and online surveys. Visit them today at constantcontact.com and sign up for your free 60-day trial.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a few things. The first thing is the reporters, when a story breaks, are looking for somebody that they can talk to, that they can quote. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, let's just use, for example, the Gap logo as an example. So when the Gap logo thing breaks and people start talking about it, the right thing to do is right away write a blog post about it, because that blog post will be indexed by Google in real time.
Right.
And when a reporter enters, you know, the Gap new logo or whatever phrase, it'll bring up the blog post. So it's essential to do that really quickly. I mean, don't think about it. Just get the blog post out there. You can always revise it, you know, an hour from now or 2 hours from now, but get that blog post out quickly. That's the first thing. The second thing is do a search on Twitter to see if you can find any reporters who are looking around or asking questions about it, because frequently they'll be using Twitter to engage. And then also do your own Google search, and particularly do a search on Google News. Now, a lot of people don't realize that if you do a search on the regular Google, you're searching the entire web. If you do a search on Google News, you're searching only news stories that have come out in the last whatever month. So what you do, the reason that you search on Google News is now you'll be able to find, have there been any reporters who have written a story on a breaking subject really quickly? And if there has been, the right thing is to hightail it over to that story on the web. Let's say it's a Kansas City Star story, and then you can comment on that reporter's story and say, hey, you know, great story, but hey, here's another angle maybe you didn't think about. You can point to your own blog post, or better yet, and actually you could do both of these things, almost all of those reporters will list their email address or their Twitter ID. So you could send them a very polite email, don't spam them, but a polite email that says, love the story you just posted on the Gap's logo. I wrote about it too. Here's my blog post. Here's an angle you didn't think about. Mm-hmm. And then also, if they have a Twitter ID, you could tweet and say, you know, so-and-so, using their Twitter ID, just wrote a great story on the Gap. Here's my story. It looks like we agree.
Yeah.
Now, what you're doing in all of those cases is you're alerting that reporter that you've got some more information. Now, what's cool about this, which I love about this, and so few people know, is that tomorrow morning's Kansas City Star newspaper, the print edition, is going to have the newest version of that story that you just found online. And so if they wrote a story at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're going to rewrite that story for print, and they're probably doing it right now, 4:30 in the afternoon, Eastern time, or 5:30 your time. I'm sorry, 3:30 your time, and then all of a sudden you can get in that story, because you found out an angle in order to get into that story. How different is that than what so many people do, is just send these inane press releases about their goddamn products that nobody cares about.
No, it's absolutely true. And, you know, quite frankly, that relationship building that you just described is great long-term play anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And then you get in their Rolodex and they contact you later. And but, I mean, this isn't theory. This works. And this is how reporters are creating stories these days. They're looking for something that's going on, and they're finding the sources that they quote by doing a Google search.
So we're about out of time, but I want to end on one topic that a lot of people think in terms of when they think of PR, they don't necessarily think of this topic. And that's the whole idea of crowdsourcing, which is sort of a real-time phenomenon as well. And frankly, it can be used for some PR angles, but also naming products, creating marketing materials, getting your logo, judged, product development. I mean, how does that fall in the real-time sort of conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I have a chapter on crowdsourcing in the book, Real-Time Marketing and PR book, because I think it's an interesting approach to solving some of the problems that you just described. I mean, if you need a new logo, if you need a new company name, gosh, if you're naming a book, one of my friends, Mark Levy, came up with his book title by crowdsourcing it.
Yeah, Guy Kawasaki's new book, he's got the whole cover design was crowdsourced.
Oh, was it? Yeah, exactly. So crowdsourcing simply means that you put a request out to your followers through Twitter or your blog or some other mechanism, and then request that people submit their ideas, whether it's a logo design or a book title or whatever. Now, I included it in the real-time book because you can do that. You can create an outcome much more quickly in many cases than you can if you hire an expert to come in and help you, like a branding agency or something, or if you put it to committees within your own organization. I mean, I worked for some larger organizations in my career, and a naming process to name a product could take literally months.
Yeah.
You know, it's just awful. It's an awful, awful situation. And so why not put it out to the crowd? One of the reasons to put it out to the crowd is because you can come up with an answer much more quickly than you could otherwise. An example of that is Kodak has a series of small handheld digital video cameras that are, by the way, great for filming YouTube videos. And they've traditionally gone by these wacky names like, you know, the ZI-8 and the ZI-6 and all this, you know, very sort of stark kind of product names. And they came up with a waterproof digital video camera. It's small. It costs like $150. And they crowdsourced the name, and the crowd came up with the name Kodak PlaySport. And it's a great name. It's a fantastic name. Could they have come up with that by going through to a committee? Well, maybe. Could they have done it if they had hired a $50,000 branding agency? Maybe. But in virtually no time, they came up with a great name that was crowdsourced. They actually invited the person who came up with the name, got some prizes and whatnot. But the Kodak, and I own one. I have a Kodak PlaySport in my briefcase right now. I use it all the time.
Well, David, we are running out of time. I always enjoy catching up with you, chatting with you, and I know that real-time marketing and PR is going to end up on the bookshelf next to New Rules of Marketing and PR as probably for a lot of folks kind of their go-to resource when they're trying to think about ideas on how to do this stuff, because it as you said, you know, I almost hear giddiness in your voice. I think you enjoy this stuff, and I think you see, you know, people that really get it, you know.
I do. I love it. I mean, my first job was on a bond trading desk, and I lived the real-time world for a couple of years, and it's so cool. You can apply the ideas of bond trading to marketing, and whoa, how cool is that? So I appreciate the interest, John, and it's always good, by the way, to see you in person, which we we did last week, which is always wonderful.
Yeah, we can do all of this stuff in the digital world, but at the end of the day, we still got to have hugs and handshakes, don't we?
Got to see those sneakers, man. If I don't see those sneakers a couple times a year, I go to withdrawal.
Well, I got my gray Chucks on today, so.
Good.
All right, Dave, great to chat with you,
thanks,
and
man.
We'll see you out there on the road again.
Cool.